Lest I forget to mention it, I brought four articles that are free of charge that have to do with hand clapping and some other matters. Love for you to have your copy if you would like to have that. Also, I've been asked about this material that I'm presenting. If you go down to Sister Farr's table, she should have this information or can get it for you, these proclamations and so forth. Well, in our last session together, we talked about the fact that these premier founders of our civilization laid out these 15 utterances, organic political utterances to our nation, to the entire population. They would take these and print them in all the newspapers up and down the Eastern Seaboard. So that was their target audience, fellow Americans. And in fact, these proclamations are literally loaded with spiritual principles, spiritual morality, and certainly concepts that come from the Christian religion. Look at this one. It being the indispensable duty of all nations, not only to offer up their supplications to Almighty God, the giver of all good, for his gracious assistance in time of distress, but also in a solemn and public manner to give him praise for his goodness in general, and especially for great and signal interpositions of his providence in their behalf. Therefore, the United States and Congress assemble, taking into their consideration the many instances of divine goodness to these states in the course of the important conflict in which they have been so long engaged, the present happy and promising state of public affairs and the events of the war in the course of the year now drawing to a close, particularly the harmony of the public councils, which is so necessary to the success of the public cause. Is our nation more fragmented and divided than ever before? You see, that's going to destroy a nation. We have to be united in the things that really matter. Politicians have always disagreed with each other. That's okay. But if you'll go back and look at your American history, politicians never disagreed in our country over whether there's a God, whether the Bible is the Word of God, whether Christianity is the one true religion, whether Christian morality. If you had talked to any politician, let's say from 1950 all the way back, and said, "Do you think it's okay for two men to get married?" To ask that question is to answer. That shows a tremendous moral decline that has occurred in our country. We do hereby recommend to the inhabitants of these states in general to observe and request the several states to interpose their authority in appointing and commanding the observation of Thursday, the 28th day of November next, as a day of solemn thanksgiving to God for all his mercies. They do further recommend to all ranks to testify their gratitude to God for his goodness by a cheerful obedience to his laws. How do you show gratitude to God? How many Americans know the answer to that? Look into his word and do what he tells you to do. Duh. We want the talk, we don't want the walk. And by promoting, now look at this. Here's the Continental Congress urging every American to promote in each in his station and by his influence the practice of true and undefiled religion, which is the great foundation of public prosperity and national happiness. We saw in a previous proclamation where they said there's the key to happiness in our country. Now here's where they say the economy depends on it. Do you know that as people pour into our country from all over the world, why have people from all over the world wanted to pour into our country? They're not people all over the world wanting to pour into Iran. They're trying to come here. Well, right at the time when our own citizens are unable to tell all these people why this country stands out from all others, we're not able to do it. They come here and they don't know why. In fact, they see a wicked and degraded civilization. We're leading the world in the charge for same-sex marriage. So they don't see it in us. They just figure, well, things just kind of happen that way, I guess. And so we want this. We want all this wealth. And our citizens are unable to stand up and say, now you understand why this is the way it is. Our own people don't know or believe it. The founders did. In fact, they actually said, you know, we're launching an experiment here that if we could live to see it, America ought to become the most prosperous nation. We ought to become the most technologically advanced. the most accomplished in virtually all aspects of science and literature and art. You know, America has the best toilets. Ever gone to some of these other countries and looked at their plumbing? I mean, it's unbelievable. Why? Because we've created an environment where Americans, without interference and intrusion from the government or anybody else, they can use their ingenuity and their freedom to do things. That's why, you know, the telephone was invented here, the telegraph was invented here. That's not to say that, by the way, Europe was generally Christian in its orientation, although the founder said that's a corrupt form of it. But it's been generally in Christian-oriented, what the founders called the general principles of Christianity. They disagreed with each other on a lot of doctrine. But creating an environment where the citizens acknowledge the one truth, that'll create an atmosphere where civilization's going to advance. Have you seen that book, The 5,000-Year Leap? In which the author of that book says, you know, if you look back over the 6,000 years of human history and its gradual progress, in the last two centuries, because of America, technology has taken a 5,000-year leap in advancement. And he says, that's because this is the one nation that said, we're setting this thing up to acknowledge the one true God, the Creator, who's invested us with certain rights. And therefore, our civilization has benefited from that. Even the people who come here don't agree with that. And that's fine as long as we don't let them get into office and get into our schools. But we turn that over to them, we're going to lose the whole thing. Do you remember just before the Israelites entered into the Promised Land? You know, the book of Deuteronomy was designed, that word means second law from the Septuagint Greek term. That is, the law of Moses given 40 years earlier at Mount Sinai is restated. If you want to know the keys to national success, go to that book. It's just as crisp and pertinent today as it was then. I mean, that is the only nation in human history where God himself laid out civil law. He gave a lot of other laws too, ceremonial type, you know, Leviticus type thing, sacrifice. But as far as just setting up a nation, a theocracy, one nation under God, and saying, okay, here's the law code. That's the law of Moses. So if you want to know, apart from the church, how a country ought to operate, go to the Torah. For example, should we or should we not have the death penalty? Well, you know, you ask a lot of Americans these days, oh, no, we shouldn't do that. And so it's gone largely by the wayside. I think Texas is still hanging in there, but see, because if you just ask people, what do you think? Well, I feel. You're not going to get anywhere. Doesn't matter what I feel, what you feel. What did God say? If God was setting up this country, what would he do? All right, under the law of Moses, there were no fewer than 16 capital crimes. Not only for things like homosexuality and murder, but even for kidnapping. You know how many children are kidnapped every day in this country, taken off, sexually abused, and ruined? God said, that's a death penalty offense. Do you know there was a fellow down in Louisiana just 3 or 4 years ago? Raped his 8-year-old stepdaughter. Got to go read the court case. When the paramedics arrived on the scene, blood everywhere, took her in and did surgery on her. She was shredded. It's a wonder she didn't bleed to death. He told everybody that he was turning her into a woman. Believe it or not, in the state of Louisiana, they have the death penalty for sexual assault of a minor. So it went all the way through the court system. The first jury said, death penalty. Went on up to the highest court in the state of Louisiana, death penalty. Then it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, still tilted to the left. Oh, we can't kill him. Justice Kennedy said, that would risk our own descent into brutality. Well, I don't know Justice Kennedy personally, but just from that statement I know, he doesn't know God. He's not acquainted with the God of the Bible. And our judicial system, generally speaking, is not acquainted with the God of the Bible. Because God said, just kidnapping that little girl would be a death penalty offense. Imagine how he would feel about that brutality. So our people are no longer acquainted with the God of the Bible if they think he would not want the death penalty imposed across our nation consistently for any number of crimes. The founders understood that. They understood it. They were not for cruel and unusual, which, by the way, today we define as anything except putting somebody to sleep with a needle. We've got a warped understanding there. If the God of the universe would command his people to take stones and to kill a person, then that's not cruel and unusual. And our founders understood that hanging is not, firing squad is not. We finally developed the gas chamber and the electric chair. What they call cruel and unusual was like drawing and quartering a person, torturing them, cutting them up, things like that, which is done in non-Christian countries. Well, did God say anything about things like this? What's the key to national prosperity? You know, if you could line up all of the economists in the country, get all the highfalutin ones, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Dartmouth, get them all together, get them all in one big room, and say, folks, we are in big trouble as a nation. Everyone from one end of the spectrum to the other says, we're in big trouble. We're on the verge of imminent collapse economically. You know, when they talk about, we've already created enough debt that our great, 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 well, wait a minute. That's just a little index. We're not going to last that long. It's not like, well, we can just keep amassing debt and that'll just mean further down the line they'll have to pay for it. No, your country can't stand that. That's just an indicator of how long it would take for you to pay that back. But if we could get all of them in the room, the brightest minds in America, and ask them, what's the solution to this thing? How can we fix this? I suspect not one of them would say this. The key to public prosperity is the practice of true and undefiled religion. Do you believe that or not? Founders did. And it's what the Bible says. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, when God was giving the Israelites the keys to survival and sustaining their national existence in the new land. Remember that? He said, now, it's going to come to pass if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, observe carefully all of his commandments, which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. Doesn't this sound prophetic? Not referring to America, but it sure fits. The Lord will open to you as good treasure the heavens to give the rain to your land in season to bless all the works of your hand. You're going to lend to other nations. You're not going to have to borrow. And then, of course, he proceeds to say, you know what? If you don't obey me, you don't observe carefully these commandments, all kinds of curses are going to come upon you. Folks, it's time for us preachers to pull that list out and start examining it. I believe that they are the Hebrew terms that are precursors. They are equivalent to a lot of the things we're seeing happening today, like the fact that now we're being told that antibiotics, which are such a boon to mankind, has turned around to bite us in terms of developing these superbugs where antibiotics are no longer having the effects. It would be just like God to bless us with a great blessing, and then we turn against him, so he says, oh, okay, I'll just turn that over. We have other things that are starting to plague our country. You know, when God says the country that I bless will be taken care of and be protected, and if you turn against me, I'll withdraw my protection. We're seeing that now. We're seeing it happening before our eyes. All right? You're going to have curses come upon you. The alien who is among you, he's going to rise higher and higher above you. You're going to go down lower and lower. He's going to lend to you, but you're not going to lend to him. He's going to be the head. You're going to be the tail. Now, if this doesn't send chills down your back, if that's not eerie, in seeing that we as a nation are fulfilling God's predictions about nations that turn against him, we're right in the throes of it. We've amassed more debt in the last 50 years beyond any civilization in human history. Some say it's approaching $50 trillion. You know, the government's out of control, but so's the average American. Credit cards are loaded. If your great-grandparents knew that you had a credit card that you were putting stuff on, they'd bend you over the bed and give you a whipping. They had a different view of how we ought to live our lives when it comes to our money. Here's the final proclamation. The dust is settled. The war is over. It's pleased the supreme ruler of all human events to dispose the hearts of the late belligerent powers to put a period to the effusion of human blood by proclaiming a cessation of all hostilities by sea and land. These United States are not only happily rescued from the dangers and calamities to which they've been so long exposed, but their freedom, sovereignty, and independence ultimately acknowledged. And whereas in the progress of a contest on which the most essential rights of human nature depended, the interposition of divine providence in our favor hath been most abundantly and most graciously manifested. And the citizens of these United States have every reason for praise and gratitude to the God of their salvation. They didn't praise the great capability of their military people. They didn't even say, you know, if we didn't have superior firepower to the British, we wouldn't have won this thing. They did not have superior firepower. They didn't have a military that was really worth what military strategists would say as being responsible for what was accomplished. They say we have got to, as a nation, thank God for how this has come out. He's the author. He's the one that's brought this about. So what do we need to do? We need to set aside a day in which we give public thanksgiving, that all the people may then assemble to celebrate with grateful hearts and united voices the praises of their supreme and all bountiful benefactor for his numerous favors and mercies. He conducted us in safety through the perils and vicissitudes of the war. He's given us unanimity and resolution to adhere to our just rights. He's raised up a powerful ally, France, to assist us in supporting them. You know, they went through their revolution about 10 or 15 years later. They claimed they were establishing a republic like us. You know what the founder said? And they were thankful for France, for what they had done to help us, especially Lafayette. He became a national hero in our country. They said, you can't do in your country what we've done here. You've got too many atheists and skeptics among your intelligentsia, and the rank and file of your population are immoral. See, what we did in America, go read Noah Webster's assessment of the French Revolution. He said, this is a very unique, momentary oasis in human history, where it's like the vast majority of a population and its leaders all came together for one brief, shining moment, where they had their dominoes in a row and they looked to God, and the rank and file Americans were very moral conscious, very thoughtful about. Look at what Alexis de Tocqueville, in his assessment of America 50 years after the founding in the 1830s. Look what he says about marriage. No place in the world, he said, where marriage is held up as an institution that provides the glue to civilization and fosters all of the wonderful blessings that America enjoys. Where did he get that idea? Where did Americans get that idea? God set up the home before he set up the church on this planet. And therefore, it's to be governed by him, not by politicians who decide how to redefine it. Look what they say at the very, very end here. Notice they say our entire dependence, entire, look at that. We are acknowledging our entire dependence on that almighty being whose goodness and bounty our rights and blessings have been derived. And above all, he has been pleased to continue to us the light of the blessed gospel and secure to us in the fullest extent the rights of conscience and faith and worship. We have a right to worship how we want, not according to the Church of England, was basically what they were saying. And finally, to smile upon our seminaries, means of education, to cause pure religion and virtue to flourish, to give peace to all nations, and to fill the world with his glory. Astounding. At the time, the president of the Congress was Elias Boudinot, who wrote 30 years later, wrote a refutation of Thomas Paine's Age of Reason. That's who all our liberal professors in our universities go to try to whitewash the entire Continental Congress, our founders, with what kind of men they were. Well, look at Thomas Paine. He wrote Age of Reason. And it's, you know, a slam on Christianity. They don't tell our young people that not only was he one of about three or four, but they don't tell you that the rest of the founders jumped on him. I mean, like a chicken on a June bug. Do you have June bugs in South Carolina? They let him have it. John Adams called him a blackguard. We don't use that term much anymore. Patrick Henry referred to the puny efforts of Paine. I mean, they let him have it. And Franklin said, "You have turned altogether against the principles on which our country was founded." And Elias Boudinot wrote a written refutation. Go online and get it. You know, all this stuff's free. You don't have to go to Amazon. Go to loc.gov or just Google Elias Boudinot. You can download a PDF of that 300-plus page refutation instead of the age of reason. That is human reason apart from God. He titled it The Age of Revelation from God. That's who our founders were. These men jealously guarded the general concept of God, Christ, and the Bible. This proclamation gives complete credit to God for winning the war and achieving independence and national existence. Let me summarize these. I had to cut out several of them, but bear with me and let's just show how I laid all these out on the table and tried to do an honest synthesis. Okay, here's their central points. Here's the stuff. What they said about God: supreme ruler of the universe, sovereign Lord of heaven and earth, righteous governor of the world, disposer of all events, great creator, arbiter of the fate of nations. He is integrally and intimately active in exerting his providence in the affairs of nations. He possesses the capability to bless or destroy a nation, to deliver or punish depending on the actions of the people. Is this all biblical? It's what they said in these proclamations. Recognition of his infinite attributes is essential. They speak of his love, grace, compassion, kindness, mercy, benevolence, goodness, wisdom, wrath, justice, omnipotence, providential aid, protection, and assistance. All people are under obligation to acknowledge him, obey him, praise him, thank him, seek his favor, blessings, and interposition, and beg him for forgiveness for breaking his laws. Here are the terms that they use to refer to him. Just an astounding listing. Don't have time to dwell upon these, but they capture the nature of God and describe biblical concepts. What do they say about Jesus? Well, he is our divine and gracious Redeemer. He is our Lord. He is our blessed Savior. He died on the cross for human sin. That makes him the mediator by which pardon and forgiveness and eternal glory are achieved. Everybody must render allegiance to Jesus. See, that's blasphemous to those who believe in the Quran. In fact, the Quran says, if you believe that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, he's deity, you will go to hell. That's what the Quran says. Good prophet, yeah, like a lot of other prophets of Allah. But to say that he's God who came in the flesh, the Quran even says Jesus was not crucified. Think of the implications of that with regard to atonement and the very nature of God. See, Allah is not the God of the Bible. He has different ideas and different says and does things that the God of the Bible would not say or do. Notice what the founder said about Christianity. It is the one true religion from God. Knowledge of God's will via the gospel and the kingdom or church of Christ must be promoted universally throughout the world. The religion of Christ is the foundation of independence, public prosperity, and national happiness. Regarding the Bible, it is where God's holy laws are situated. That's how people are to be governed, all nations. The Old Testament has tremendous significance, but especially the New Testament is the portion that promotes the precepts of Christ. What do they say about sin? Well, that's violations of God's will. People today don't even know how to define sin. But these men did. 1 John 4, they understood what the Bible says about sin. Therefore, citizens have to acknowledge their guilt, confess their transgressions, fast and pray to God for his forgiveness, amend their lives, strive to live faithfully. You know, they promoted days of fast. We don't typically do that. I don't believe that that is a required worship activity like singing or praying, but it's certainly something we can do. There's nothing wrong with it, especially Americans. It wouldn't hurt if we set aside a day and didn't eat anything. What are citizens obligated to do? Obey the laws of God in order for the nation to be successful and enduring. Pray, fast, show humility, openly admit unworthiness and dependence upon God, strive to be virtuous and promote piety in your life, assemble to worship God. Did you know the latest statistics, the latest polls show that the number of Americans who go to church on Sunday has dropped below 50%. On any given Sunday, more than half of Americans are out doing whatever they're doing on Sunday. They're not going to church. Now, think of the magnitude of that statistic. So where are those people and their children getting any spiritual nourishment? Are they learning anything about God, Christ, the Bible? How long can a civilization sustain that, where the people are no longer even made aware by the general institutions, the civic institutions of our country, where those God's been stripped out of all of that? I'm telling you, that nation is doomed. There is no hope for it. I don't care what the economy's doing or any other thing that's going on. If we lose this, that's going to be the key. When our nation collapses and begins to experience catastrophic suffering, even then, I don't know if many Americans, we've raised so many people in the university system in the last 30 years, do not believe in God, they're humanists and so forth. I don't even know if they're subjected to suffering, that even then they would come to their senses and say, maybe there is a God. Maybe we do need to look for him. I don't know. Probably blame it on the Democrats, the Republicans. We must possess personal, patriotic, sacrificial interest in our country. I asked you this question earlier. Who were these men? They certainly weren't perfect. By the way, they've been accused of things that aren't true, like Thomas Jefferson fathering children by his slave daughter or slave woman. I'm telling you, that's a lie. The magazine that released that to the world was Nature, a prestigious scientific journal. How many people went and looked at the issue 2 months later in which they had been challenged by geneticists and other health officials, in which they said, the genetic evidence shows that it could have been Randolph, his brother, it could have been other lineal descendants. They came back and said, well, that's true. We just didn't explore all of those possibilities. And yet here they've sullied that man. I have no reason to stick up for him. But they've sullied his name and his reputation. And whitewashed, kind of brushstroked the founders. That's not fair. You wouldn't want to be treated that way 200 years from now. People to say stuff about you. Well, founders clearly believe the very existence of the Republic depends on citizen attachment. Do you remember George Orwell talked about Big Brother? I remember the hippie element of my day in the 50s and 60s. You know, oh, government's big brother looking down on us. What they meant by that was they're trying to keep immorality out of public life. That element, that group that fussed at that, are now the very ones that have become the government oppressors. You thought about that? And yet George Orwell said the most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. That's happened to us. Don't miss the point. I had a fellow come up to me down there in Alabama when I presented some of this material and not a member of the church. He said, you know, I don't go to church. I never really realized that the founders were that religious, you know. Well, you may not choose to go to church or follow Christian morals, but here's what the founders said on the matter. They said in order for our country to be maintained, most of the people are going to have to do that. So people who are not real religious, even if they're, you know, fairly good and moral, they're part of the problem. They're not part of the solution. We've got to get people to acknowledge God. That's our only hope. It's obvious that many politicians, judges, citizens want to change America to where we basically embrace everyone and everything. They think that's healthy. That adds, how did some of our politicians put it, that adds to the fabric of our country and makes us stronger. You know, that's all a bunch of liberal gobbledygook. The only way for me to even know whether that's true is to go ask God. And the Bible teaches that's not true. Can you imagine Elijah on Mount Carmel? We're all assembled here today to show our tolerance, to show how willing we are to embrace diversity and celebrate it. So I'm going to have a few things to say in a moment. But in the meantime, we want our brethren from the Baalites to come forth and present their ideas. We have our children assembled here. We want them to hear all these different views. We're even thinking about setting aside a Baal Day in public schools just to, you know, let the kids be aware of it. And then I'll have a few things to say, but none of us should be so intolerant. You know, we may not agree with each other, but that's okay. But we shouldn't be so intolerant as to say, you're wrong and I'm right. We ought to live and let live, the book in the 60s. I'm okay, you're okay. Let's just all... Is that the God of the Bible? Is that the prophets? Was that Jesus? Was that John the Baptizer? See, we've gotten away from keeping our thinking clear and straight and single-sided. We're not spending enough time in our Bibles. Our country's not. And therefore, they are sitting ducks to be tossed to and fro by every wind of doctrine. That's what's happened to us. Well, to deny or misrepresent this heritage is gross ignorance or deliberate deceit, a ploy perhaps to try to get mileage. Ask yourself this question. What the ACLU and other organizations like this don't understand is the only reason why they're even in a country where they can spread their infidelity is because the overall orientation of our nation has been Christian in its orientation. It's the only way that could even happen. If the ACLU went to Saudi Arabia or Iraq and did some of the things they're doing in our country, it'd be the end of that organization. Isn't it interesting? The Muslims, they've come into this situation and they see this politically correct atmosphere where, hey, we got our rights, we can assert ourselves. And you know good and well, if you've read the Quran, their attitude is, we'll use them as long as it's possible, but then once we take over, no more homosexual marriage, by the way. Question. What country in our lifetime has been the premier atheistic nation on earth? Would that be Russia? You know, before they threw off communism, they openly said, we're going that way. Okay? Anybody want to go live there? What country in our lifetime has been the premier Hindu nation on earth? India. Mahatma Gandhi said, the gift of Hinduism to the world is the sacred cow. That's what he said. Not too long ago, Nepal Airlines had a malfunction in one of their airplanes that was out on the tarmac, some sort of electrical problem. They sent for a Hindu shaman to come out and chant over it. You see, false religion can have a direct effect on how you live life every day. By the way, you're going to fly that airline? People's religious thinking directly impacts their everyday behavior. Americans don't seem to want to understand that and face it. Every time somebody gets shot in our country, they want a new gun law. We've got more gun laws on the books now. That's not the problem. The problem is that these shooters that come in and kill all these kids, just go look at their private life. And look what they've been, gothic and all. They've been into all kinds of things. They're from broken homes. They're from homes where their parents are not interested in God. They've never been to church. They're amoral. You don't hear anybody say that at Connecticut or Columbine, but that's the only problem. And making more gun laws or trying to get rid of all the guns is the height of absurdity and foolishness. How long has been murder going on in our world and human history? Did Cain have a gun? No, really, that political mentality, you watch. If we could cleanse our civilization of the guns, then somebody would pick up a knife. Okay, that's next. Get rid of all the knives. We get rid of all those. Then next thing you know, somebody would pick up a piece of wood, a club. Well, we got to get rid. Then it's the rocks. Now, I'd like for them to come to my yard and start there. You know, if you're really going to try this. This is insane. The problem in our nation is moral. It's not money. It's not objects, physical things. These physical things are neutral as far as God is concerned. They become tools to commit evil. So you have to teach people what is evil. Killing children is evil. Get all worked up about those poor children in Connecticut. And yet, since 1973, our country has butchered over 50 million of our kids. Where's all the concern and laws about that? And if Abel's righteous blood cried to God from the soil upon which Cain shed it, imagine what 50 million shrieking little babies sounds like in the ears of God. You and I may not hear that, but God does. No doubt, looking down spiritually at our nation, our streets are running, flowing with blood. And we go merrily on our way and worry about our Social Security and our pension and our pocketbook. Shame on us. I'm really surprised that God has not already lowered the boom on our nation. We sure deserve it. It can only be by His grace and providence. So, are any of you planning on moving to India? You know, there are people who go there to work or whatever, but no, the Indians are coming here as quick as they can. Well, what's the premier nation on earth in our lifetime that's very Islamic? Well, Arabia, Iraq, Iran, all those. People aren't flocking to go there. See, even if you have different views on such things, these are facts. What countries in our lifetime have been the premier socialist countries? Well, there's a number of them. Cuba, Venezuela. You know, Cuba's just down here, just below our border. And many of you are old enough to remember the 1950s when Castro by coup took over. All right, now we've had over 50 years to look at it. What does socialism do for a country? Since our people are ignorant of history and what the founders said, that is a mostly state-run economy. You want to see what that looks like? Go look at it. That's what it is. Universal health care for the people. The government provides that. Government-paid education at all levels. Numerous social programs. The whole concept of redistribution of wealth, that's very much a part of their rationale, their thinking. As of 2002, over a million Cubans have come here. And go down there and where there's a large Cuban population in Florida, talk to them, ask them. Tell us what your thinking is about all this. Why aren't you there? Why are you here? They'll tell you. I found this article about Havana and Cubans and so forth and how hard it is on them there. You know, if you go down there and look, the few people that have automobiles, guess what they are? 1950s Chevrolets. Not 2010 Chevrolets, 1950s, because that was just when the revolution was occurring. So the few cars that are there are old, and they managed to keep them going. Look at some of these comments here. The standard of living of Cubans has deteriorated thanks to the communist government, the U.S. trade embargo, the disappearance of the Soviet Union that propped them up. Hundreds of thousands of Cubans live in substandard free housing. They line up to receive government rations of chicken, rice, and even sugar. You want to do that every day? Set aside several hours every day of your life and go down and get in a line. You want to do that? And yet it's already happening among those that feel that's where they should turn. You ought to look at the pictures. The monthly rations are distributed in small neighborhood shops. People line up 10 or 15 deep for their allocations of beans, eggs, chicken. Well-worn blackboards propped in the corners of the store guide family shopping and menu. Even toilet paper appears to be in short supply. See, Americans sit back, that'll never happen here. Oh, it will if we adopt those very ideals. If we reject the Christian concept and turn toward those philosophies, what else would happen? That's exactly what we would expect to happen. We ought to be thankful for the lifestyle that God has provided for this country that our founders orchestrated with all their problems and issues. Well, why would anybody want to go against what we've been saying here? Why would anybody want to change our country in terms of its basic fundamental principles? May I suggest to you, it's really not hard. Go to the Bible. God lays out a couple of fundamental motives that always motivate people. And in our country, especially the 60s generation, we want to be able to do what we want to do. Do our own thing. I don't want anybody telling me who I can and cannot have sex with. That sounds kind of crude and sad to have to say that, but that's it. That's it. I actually saw an evolutionist debating a Christian theist, and he went off on that and thought he was really making a great point, you know, that, yeah, these Christians pretty much want to ban us from doing anything, and most of what they ban has to do with what we do when our clothes are not on. Everybody laughed. I thought, he said more than he intended to say. That's what this is about. That's why he doesn't believe in God. He wants to be able to do whatever he wants to do. We have taken that and enshrined it in the halls of academia and let them stand up there and spew out all of this so-called sophisticated unbelief and skepticism. Well, God's words still stand. Righteousness is what exalts a nation. Sin will be a reproach to us. It'll bring us down. God has rebuked many nations before us. And in fact has destroyed them and blotted out their name. They have uncovered civilizations that nobody even knew existed in very barren, arid, desolate parts of the world that had some elevated achievements like brain surgery down in South America. But they also had idolatry, paganism, and sexual perversion. And God so obliterated them that for all practical purposes, they have disappeared. They've evaporated from the planet, and there have been many. God was not obligated to tell us every time he did what he did to Sodom and Gomorrah. You think God's put a list in the Bible? Here's all the nations I've wiped off the earth. So don't assume he hadn't done a number of them. Archaeology shows that he has. Nations will be judged. They need to understand that we're mere men. The Father, he's the only person that's gone down in our history as the Father of our country. I'm sure there never was a people who had more reason to acknowledge a divine interposition in their affairs than those of the United States. And I would be pained to believe that they have forgotten that agency, which was so often manifested during our revolution, or that they fail to consider the omnipotence of that God who is alone able to protect them. Our military is not going to save us. It didn't keep 9-1-1 from happening. He said only God can protect us. Not freedom from religion, but freedom for religion. They were talking about the Christian religion. What was said of Israel may be said of us right now. Look at this. Because you did not serve the Lord your God with joy and gladness of heart for the abundance of everything. That's us. We don't need God. We've got everything else. All right? There's going to be some external enemies here that are going to wreak havoc upon you because there's no other approach to life. It's either Christ or chaos. All right, let me close. By the way, this is America's most pressing concern. All this material is available in book form, DVD form, proclamation packet. All of this is down at Sister Farr's table, as I understand it. Thank you for your kind attention today. God bless each one of you as you work in the Lord's kingdom.